History of NA Workshop. At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, which is Bob from Fort Lauderdale.
I'm actually going to do a short speech here and do a slideshow because it's fun to do.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, my name is Bob Manatic.
Bob.
And Dutch is a living archive. I'm just a baby archive. I got clean August 13th, 1977, which is pretty cool, you know? It's pretty cool that I'm still here. I got clean in central Pennsylvania at the time. That was pretty much one of the few places in NA that NA existed. And I stayed there until Three Mile Island happened. So you remember that, right? And so I left and never came back. So someone can't accuse me of being dumb, you know. I leave nuclear disasters pretty quick. So anyway, I'm going to go through this. Should take about 20 minutes. And so anyway, 1946, we had the 12 traditions were created by Alcoholics Anonymous. And it plays an important role in NA here. In 1951, they adopted the traditions. In 1953, they produced what they could call the 12 and 12, which that was the first time the traditions were actually printed and put out. And that, coincidentally, that was put out May of 1953. In June of 1953 is when the group started meeting to discuss starting Narcotics Anonymous, the California version. Between 47 and 49, a guy named Danny Carlson, who'd been in and out of the Lexington narcotics farm, we'll talk a little bit about that, started what was called Narcotics Anonymous in New York. It wasn't the Narcotics Anonymous that you know today. It differed in many ways. It had different versions of steps. It had it met a little bit differently. Some of the things that were part of it were the Synanon. They played the Synanon game as part of the meeting sometimes. And so it was kind of a strange thing. Also, there wasn't, back in that period of time, there wasn't a real commitment to continue to total abstinence. So there's a little bit of question as to what the New York NA was really like. In 1953, Jimmy and a group of people started a meeting to discuss starting something like Narcotics Anonymous. But prior to that, there were a few groups that had started, Addicts Anonymous, a couple other groups in L.A. and different parts of the country. Go ahead. And that was the federal narcotics farm in Lexington. It was the first treatment center, which is basically a government prison. Addicts were sent there and experimented on. That's where they used shock treatments. They were given LSD, all kinds of stuff that were supposed to help cure addiction. But it was the first place where, when it mentioned Danny Carlson, it was the first place that somebody came and helped start a 12-step fellowship for addicts. There was an AA member who came there, went and met with the addicts there, and he helped start what was called Addicts Anonymous at that prison in 1947. That group continued to meet, and in 53. There were several books and articles about the group in New York. This particular one is 53 in the Saturday Evening Post. Go ahead. One of the key elements that from the NA in New York to the NA in Los Angeles was that they both used what was called the Key. It was a newsletter, and it was part of the Lexington program. It was put out, and members, addicts that had left there, whether they went to the West Coast or East Coast, got this newsletter. Go ahead. And there's Jimmy. It's a really bad picture. All right, but that... And over on the left are copies of the original minutes and the original sign-up sheet from the original meeting. Go ahead. 1953, they started meeting at this facility to this house. where they ended up coming up with the idea of starting Narcotics Anonymous. Go ahead. And this is the flyer for the first meeting. It was held October 5th, 1953 in Sun Valley, California. Go ahead. And that's the first meeting place at Cantare and Clybourne. It was called the Dad's Club. Then if you look it up on Google, Cantare and Clybourne, you will see the exact same building. It hasn't changed in 50 some odd years. It's now a Spanish church that, and like I said, you can look it up on Google. It'll show you it's still there. It has a fence around it now. Go ahead. 1953, there was one meeting, and it was held in L.A. Go ahead. That was the little white book, which is actually brown. It wasn't really white when it first came out. And a lot of people show you these white books like they're originals. There's one way you can tell the original little white book from any other is that they're smoke stained throughout, because that's what we did back then, smoked. So all the original ones are smoke stained. Go ahead. And then this is the Just for Today, which is pretty much the same as it was then. There is one line that changed slightly. Go ahead. The NA meeting that was at the Dad's Club moved. It was at this facility, which was basically a 1950s detox, version of a detox. If you read the story, Bob B., in the basic text, I found the only NA meeting in the world. This would be the meeting that he found. Go ahead. All right. This is the 1962 version of the Little White Book, which has the traditions in it. And the reason I mentioned those traditions earlier is because that 12 and 12 AA put out was put out in May of 53, and NA started immediately following. Jimmy had always said that he wanted the traditions to follow the traditions, and that's how NA would survive. Go ahead. If you went to the World Convention in San Diego, this is they had kind of a mock meeting, and this is the meeting place that was Jimmy's home group. It was called Architects of Adversity at the corner of Rhodes Moore Park. I actually went to that meeting back in 1980. And this again when Bob went out and Bob relapsed and Bob came back. He found the only NA meeting in the world twice because it had moved. Go ahead. This was an early meeting format, and it shows again the traditions were part of that format. Go ahead. First H&I meeting was held at, I can't pronounce it, Tehachapi, whatever.
Tehachapi.
See, somebody was in that prison. They know how to say that. Go ahead. All right, that's where the second meeting was. And if you look back here, an L.A. landmark, Capitol Records. Whenever they show in the movies they're blowing up Los Angeles, that's always in the picture. So that church is about a block and a half away. Go ahead. The first H&I meeting institutional meeting, was held at the Walla Walla in Washington. That meeting, in various versions, is still there. 47 years later. Go ahead. All right, this is the original logo that Jimmy had designed, created in the 60s and lost for many years. Go ahead. Board of Trustees were formed in 64, and these guidelines were set up, and that was the first service structure that existed in NA in 1969. Go ahead. All right. And the First World Service office was in Bob's house, which was on the first floor. He had the office on the first floor, and his house was on the second floor. Go ahead. All right. This meeting's in Manhattan Beach. It's a Friday night meeting. It's been there in the same church at the same time in the same place since 1965. Chuck S. and started that meeting back then. Go ahead. This is The Voice, which is the first NA newsletter. And it was printed throughout the 80s. If you ever go to the World Service Office, you want to visit the World Service Office, they take you on a tour. The first thing you'll see inside the main building is a Ditto machine. And this was made on one of those Ditto machines, hand-cranked. We've come a long way. Go ahead. And this is the original logo. And because they didn't have you know, those all these software programs back then. If you look in the center, there's a little hole there, and they used a protractor. Jimmy used a protractor to make that with. That's where the little pinhole is in the center. Go ahead. And then by 1969, there were 30 meetings in the world. First meeting it started in Philadelphia. Go ahead. And it, Dutch may remember that one. Eagleville Hospital in Philadelphia, and that's where the first meeting on the East Coast was held. Go ahead. It's just a sign from the early WSO. There's a picture of Jimmy holding that sign at another office. Go ahead. This is another WSO back in the 70s. This was actually, back then, it was actually a bail bondsman store, you know, bail bondsman's office. So pretty easy to get from one point to another. Go ahead. This was Jimmy's house. It's much different than it was back. I visited there in 1980. First time I went to California, I went to the World Service Conference in 1980. It was the entire World Service Conference was held in the staff dining room of a college. So it was about the size of that, one-third of that room. And I went over to Jimmy's house, which was the World Service office at that time. And basically everywhere you went, there was little IPs and paper and boxes of stuff everywhere. Okay, go ahead. And that house is still there. So if you're in LA, you can give you the address. You can drive by. The original service symbol that's been in existence ever since 71. Go ahead. Let's see. Oh, this is the first World Convention flyer. A grand total of 150 people attended. And it was at a country club. Go ahead. Here's the next couple conventions. The Second World Convention. Go to the next slide. That was the site of the Second World Convention. The American Legion Hall. Yeah. Go ahead, next one. By 72, I think Dutch got clean then, right? Where'd he go? Oh, there he is. You're clean by then, right? Yeah, so there were 63 meetings in the world when he came around. And Jimmy wrote the gratitude prayer. Go ahead. There's a picture of Bob and Garth and Greg. Garth helped start NA in Australia. And I think you all know who Bob and Greg are. Go ahead. Some of the other world conventions. This was fifth one. It was held at the El Rancho Motel. Really making it there. Actually, it was the site also of the Oakland Raiders training camp. Go ahead. All right, that was the first World Service Conference in 76. Go ahead. And then they had the NA Tree, which is the first service manual, which was put together. I think it was 76 that was approved. Go ahead. And then any of us that got clean back then, I got clean with 6 IPs and a little white book, and those are pretty much the IPs that we had at the time. The two, you can see the one, So You Love an Addict, and For Those We Love and Others, which is basically a Naranon pamphlet. And the We Made a Decision IP was basically a plagiarized version of an AA piece of literature. So that was what it was then. Go ahead. And those are versions of the Little White Book. Go ahead. And this was the first Am I an Addict pamphlet, which is really cool. I was at that, where we wrote that in Warren, Ohio in 1981, and you had to see the questions that didn't get on there. All right, go ahead. German Little White Book for the 70s, go ahead. Flyers for Witness 7 and 8, which were, I think, San Francisco and Houston. It was the first time the World Convention had left California. And what happened is the North and the South, Northern California and Southern California would fight over the convention and switch back and forth. Well, when they were having the 7th convention, how they do it is, like, people that attended would go to one half of the room, and that's how they decide, whoever had the most people. Well, it was pretty much a tie, and nobody could get along. And so somebody said, "The hell with y'all, there's 4 people from Houston." So they awarded it to Houston. Go ahead. First World Literature Conference and Second World Literature Conference, where the beginning of the basic text started. Go ahead. This is part of the where we're cutting and pasting material to put together for the basic text. I attended three of those conferences. I co-chaired one of them. It was a really good experience in my life. I'll probably always remember. Go ahead. And then this is the fourth and fifth World Lit. Go ahead. And this is the World Lit Conference in Memphis where the gray book was put together. That would be me when I was young and cute. And thin. Go ahead. And this was Greg Pierce that dictated his version of the tradition materials over the phone. And as you can see, they have Selectric typewriters, kind of. Back in the day. Go ahead. And that's the gray form, which is the first version, kind of a, not an approval version, but kind of a draft version of the basic text. Go ahead. And there's those gray versions getting sent out in a pile of envelopes. Go ahead. And when it was all said and done, that was the approval copy of the basic text, the first 10 chapters. You can tell, and those, there's a lot of those out. You can tell if those are real. There's a shiny cover on the real ones. And again, go back. Thank you. Okay, now go forward. okay, and this was the basic, this was the stories that were put together in one weekend. Essentially, they were pulled, they were collected over a period of time, but the stories were put together in one weekend in Philadelphia back in 82. It was put together, sent out, and 90 days later, we had a basic text. You know, we didn't have like a year to approve anything, or this was all thrown out about 90 days prior to the World Service Conference. Go ahead. And that would be the World Service Conference where the book was approved. Go to the next one. And that would be the exact moment that the book was approved. Go to the next one. And that would be your basic text. On the left, there was 2,700 of those printed. They're numbered. Not all of them are numbered, but there's 2,700 of those. Actually, 2,300, right? There were more red books. There were more blue books than there were red. They're actually harder to get, the blue version, which is an unnumbered and unsigned book. Go ahead. There's very few of these. There's a few silver books. And they were basically given to Jimmy. Go ahead. And by the time the basic text came out, there were 3,000 meetings in the world. A few meetings in Australia, a meeting in South America, and a few throughout the rest of the world. Go ahead. There's the World Service Office in Van Nuys. Back in 83, Bob Stone had taken over for Jimmy at that point in time. Go ahead. That must have been really funny. All right. There's six versions of the basic text. I'm not telling that story. It's a long story. We'd be here all day, and nobody will agree on it anyway. So let's suffice it to say there's six versions because the other five didn't work out so well. So for whatever reason. Next. And here's the little key tags that started in 81. You notice the white key tag, but on the bottom here is a pink key tag. Bob Stone, who was a non-addict, who ran the World Service Office, was trying to get the best deal he could. And they sold him, they said the pink key tags will sell to you real cheap. So the pink key tags were actually the white key tag for a short period of time. Except nobody who owned a Harley Davidson would even touch one. So, okay, go ahead. That'd be the picture at the World Service Conference in 1984. Jimmy, that was the last time Jimmy was basically spoke to the, pretty much in front of the fellowship. A couple people you might recognize, George H. on the left, and Bob R. on the right, and Bob Stone sitting at the table, and Susan C., who's still involved in World Services. Go ahead. And that'd be a news, NAN Japan started. Go ahead. And that would be the first East Coast Convention in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. One, two, three. I'm the third from the right. I'm standing on the rail, and I didn't fall down. So that was a very cool convention, 175 people, and that was the entire East Coast at the time. That was 1980. Go ahead. Just another flyer, and these are a collection of things from 1984 from Australia. Go ahead. That was from the London Convention, the first World Convention held outside the United States. That was a blast. Go ahead. 1980s, a lot of things happened. 80s were the growing time. Besides the basic text, most of the initial IPs were published in 1983. I know the sponsorship IP we did in one weekend in a hotel room in Florida, and it lasted for 20 some odd years. There are different versions of different IPs that were approved then. Go ahead. And there's a picture of Dutch in the middle at the top. That's when he was young.
Cute.
Cute too? Thin too? Those are Board of Trustees from the 80s. Amazingly, all but two are still alive and doing well. And I talk to them regularly, some of them. Anyway, that would be, actually there's one Board of Trustee member who's now on the World Board, Tom up in the left-hand corner. Go ahead. Fellowship development activities in Singapore, Malaysia. Go ahead. World Convention in Sydney, Australia. That was fun too. Good convention. Go ahead. And then in 1992, we're up to almost 20,000 meetings. As you can see, first contribution from a Russian NA group. There's a whole story about that. Go ahead. Next. Literature from the 90s, when all the basic text was approved in the 80s, and then It Works How and Why took 10 years, and It Works How and I. Working Guide, and the Just for Today, it all kind of came together after about 10 years of going back and forth. Go ahead. That's your World Service office today in California. If you ever get out there, they'll take you on a free, a tour and spend time with you. Just give them a call and let them know you're coming. And the halls are lined with all kinds of memorabilia and historical stuff. It's really interesting to go there. Go ahead. Some other events from just around the world, various places throughout the world. Go ahead. Some service material from around the world. The Cayman Islands, which is kind of cute because I'm one of the things that I'm doing in service is involved in a Latin American Zonal Forum, and I'm going to different islands throughout the Caribbean to help put the to make connections with the fellowship. And there's a lot of fellowships, little fellowships on all these islands that exist out in the Caribbean. Grand Caymans are just one of them. Go ahead. This was the World Convention in Colombia, which President Clinton attended, not by plan. He just happened to use the same hotel at the same weekend. All right, go ahead. And this is 20 years after NA started in Japan. It took them 20 years to translate the basic text into Japanese. Go ahead. And 2002, that'd be 30,000 meetings worldwide. And first intro into China. Go ahead. And there's first IP translated into Chinese. Go ahead. There's a world convention in San Diego. And there's a world convention in Hawaii. There's various public relation events throughout the world, Bahrain, and Indonesia, Egypt. Go ahead. Bali, Sarajevo, Bulgaria. For a country that, Yugoslavia got all split up in life, but they formed a region now, and they have like six areas in that country, and there are actually multiple countries that all got together as one country, which, they killed each other for a decade, but they somehow can get along in NA. India, Brazil, some of the larger fellowships outside the U.S. Go ahead. And this is NA in Iran. For those of you that don't know, it's the second largest fellowship outside the United States. The meeting over there on the left is actually a convention they held in Tehran. They have about 300,000 members and 12,000 meetings. And I can tell you it's for real. I can tell you it's for real because one of the RCMs in my region is got clean in Iran and worked at the Iranian World Service Office there. And, you know, he tells stories about how it grows and grows. Next one. And that's how they work the steps in Iran. They have a tent city where they go to and people, an average sponsor sponsors 125 to 150 people. They work the steps literally in a classroom, and instead of getting a birthday cake or a medallion for an anniversary, you get a birthday cake for completing the 12 steps. That's a picture in Kenya, which is a growing fellowship in Africa. These are various places, Bahrain, St. Petersburg. When I went to that convention in London, I remember sitting in the international meeting, which is about six people from various countries were speaking, and this guy Omad from Bahrain was talking, and I didn't even know where Bahrain was, and he talked about his friends and how they treated people there as they chopped their hands off if you got caught, you know, in various forms of illegal drugs over there, and that's how they prosecuted people. Go ahead. The Mexican Convention, 2007. But the highest NA convention in the world. Yes, okay, that's in Nepal. And this is 2 years ago, 50,000 meetings in the world. The sixth edition basic text was approved. And as you can see, that 11,672 in the Middle East is mostly because of Iran. Go ahead. Sixth edition of the basic text. This is the World Service Conference, which will take place next week in LA, the next two weekends. Like I said, I went to the World Service Conference in 1980. Maybe there was 50 people in the room sitting around a bunch of lunch tables and steel chairs. And now there's, I think about 350 people attend this conference. Go ahead. In fact, I know that the person from Iran actually got a visa so they can actually attend the World Service Conference this time. And that's basically just some links and some just pictures from around the world of different fellowships. And that's it. I think that's it. So now it's time for Dutch.
That was really cool, really cool. I mean, really, I don't know, I'm like a little emotional. But that was, and what happens, I forgot about a lot of things, and just seeing that, it just, my head's kind of spinning now. But I did get clean in 1972. And it wasn't, we didn't have a meeting list. There was no literature on the books, on the tables. And it was kind of, we kind of did NA like they do. And where's that tent city place? NA was like the Wild West. There was no rules back then. In fact, we couldn't even get meeting places. Because when we would go, we tried to piggyback off of another 12-step fellowship. And where they had meetings, we went there because we were so sure that they would give us meetings there, and we found out that that wasn't so true, that a lot of places thought that we would, at that time they had what was called Kotex machines. They thought that we would rob the Kotex machines and drink the wine. So we got denied in a lot of places. And back then, When I got clean, there was one person who had social skills, and that guy's name was Ray T. He had a job, he was married, he had a car, he had kids, he lived at home with them, and we just wondered how he could think he was an addict. And, you know, the whole thinking has come a long way since then. What happened, I was in Eagleville Hospital when I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, a fellow by the name of Roy P., whose father was a doctor in San Francisco, was in the program. He came east to visit his grandmother, who lived in the Philadelphia area, with this book. And he had a couple of the books, and I got one of them. And it was like a breath of fresh air, because we had people from another 12-step fellowship come in to Eagleville Hospital. And Eagleville Hospital used to be a tuberculosis clinic. We were, it wasn't called a rehabilitation center. It was experiments and guinea pigs. And you got to understand, there was no detoxes to get clean before you went to a rehab. You went in and got sick. I stayed on the tile floor in the bathroom for 12 days at Eagleville, kicking 160 milligram a day habit of methadone. And I can remember the best place that I felt was laying on the cold tile floors in the bathroom. And you know, everything's come a long way since then. And what happened, I didn't stay clean. I went out after 362 days because I wanted to stay sick. And you know, they were planning my one-year anniversary and going to make a cake for me and all that. And I felt that I would have to start taking responsibilities on, and I didn't want to do that. I was pretty immature, and I went out for 4 months. They came and got me, and I went back, and I've been clean ever since. But I got introduced to NA there, and what happened, the meetings that we had there weren't the same. But what we had enough people that were there, because there was meetings going on the outside. I would get passes from Eagleville Hospital and go to the Broad and Duncannon in Philadelphia, the All Saints group that was started. And that was the only one that I could get to. And there was one in Springfield, but that didn't last. But the Broad and Duncannon one was pretty cool. And sorry to say, that one didn't last. And what happened was there was a group of us from Eagleville Hospital that figured out, and I don't know how we did this, but we figured out that we're all going to have to leave the hospital one day, and we need a place to go, so we need to have meetings outside of where these people can tell us what to do. And so we went around to places in Norristown, Pennsylvania, which was the town next to where Eagleville was, and there was only one place that would let us have a meeting, and that was a church, and the minister was this, I can still remember him now, he was a little black minister, and he had gray hair, and he walked with his hands like this, and he just welcomed us with open arms. And that meeting's still going on today. It's at the Plymouth Meeting Mall now, but that was the first meeting that I went to, and the one that stuck and stayed. And then it was a big deal when in 1973, we had meetings every night of the week, Narcotics Anonymous meetings every night of the week, and we made a pamphlet of having a meeting every night. In other words, nobody had any excuse why they needed to go to any other 12-step fellowship. And you know, back then, before the basic text came out, we had trying times with other 12-step fellowship, one in particular, another 12-step fellowship, you know, and a lot of it had to do with how we identified ourselves and language. And look, when the basic text came out, NA exploded. You know, we had a language and of our own, and the excitement had been building all along. I was at the thing in Ivyland when they approved the stories, and it was just an exciting time in NA. I mean, it was. This is really going to happen. And I can remember talking to Jimmy Nichols a lot. He was the guy in Lincoln, Nebraska who put on the LIC conference at the post office out there. And Cindy was pretty involved back then. In fact, Cindy, Jimmy Nichols gave me all the original input from the basic text. And because I wasn't at Lincoln, I gave it to Cindy 2 years ago or 3 years ago. I gave her the whole suitcase because Jimmy Nichols' house burned down, and the only thing that was saved was the suitcase of original input. And Cindy has that if you ever want to see the names on it. I mean, everybody's name. And the input that came in was on little slips of paper for the basic text. I mean, every single piece was looked at. And I can remember when the white book came off the press, they made 5,000 copies, and Bobby Bonds brought them back to Philadelphia, and it was just a pretty exciting time. How NA survived up till then is the only thing that way I can sum it up is the strongest statement in our literature is the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel, because that's really all we had. There wasn't any structure to speak of. There was no sponsorship to speak of. You know, you could get a sponsor, and I watch people change sponsors all the time because you get sick of each other, because the same people go to the same meeting every night, and you just get sick of it. And that's why I became a traveling addict. And I can remember I heard that there was a meeting in Marietta, Georgia, and I went down there, and I didn't find a meeting. I heard in 1975 that there was a meeting and down in Florida, and I went down to Fort Lauderdale, and there was another city down there that we went to looking for a meeting, and there was no meeting. So we got these people together at this another 12-step fellowship's clubhouse that had a glass enclosed room for smokers. I mean, they were like ahead of the times. And we went in there and we started to raid young people and try to have a meeting. And we had a meeting for a while, for a couple of weeks. And that's about all it lasted. And that was in 1975. And then, because I took the director of a rehab center, who is now a director of a rehab center, I kind of kidnapped him and took him with me. And we went down to Florida because we had heard that there was meetings. And that's how it was back then. If you heard that there was NA someplace else, you wanted to connect with the people. And the only way to do it, I mean, there was no internet. They didn't even have the big cell phones, you know. Remember the first big ones? You know, they're like this big. But they didn't even have any of that. So what had happened was, NA in the beginning, a lot of it looking back was we were victims of our own creation because we didn't have the wisdom to know the difference. There was no predecessors for us on the East Coast. There was no how do you do it? There was no survival manuals. Do you know what I mean? And then this, I don't know if anybody ever remembers or heard of her, but this girl came in, her name was Blaze, and people were afraid to go out and use because of this woman. She was like the roller derby queen of, she was a roller derby queen, but she was very intimidating to a lot of people, but she had the ability to keep people together. And then what happened down here, so I went out to the World Service Conference in 81, and I went out there just to make sure that they were running it the way that I thought they should be running NA. But you got to understand, in Philadelphia, we had written a book called Living Clean, and we had done it for 2 years. And we finally had 85 copies published. We made it on a copying machine, and we took it out there to see what they would think about it. All the excitement about the basic text was happening, so they put it on the back burner. And, so then I went to the conference in 82. I think it was at the Retail Clerks Union Hall. It was like a cafeteria style, And I was amazed that there was not even 100 people there, but there was all these political coups happening, I met the guy who typed the basic text before it went into its original thing. His guy name was Roger T. from New York. And I says, why did you do all this? He says, service, service. And he was a Southern guy. He could type 165 words a minute. And this is before we had computers. And he just whizzed all the stuff out mistake-free. And then part of the history is that he took... He wanted to be chairman of the World Lit Conference, and he didn't get elected, so he had a hissy fit, and he took a lot of the input and put it in the bus terminal down in Miami and threw the key away. You know, he really wanted to be the chairman of the World Lit Committee in 1983 when they were going to approve the basic text, but he didn't. And that was an exciting time. The 83 conference for me was an exciting time. That's where I met Randy from down here. He said, how much clean time do you got? And I says, 10 years. And he says, you're lying. He says, I've never seen anybody with 10 years clean. I says, well, I don't know what to tell you. But we brought the basic text. I brought the basic text down here. What happened was Philadelphia, the region that I was the delegate from, we voted against the basic text. We were one of the few. So Philly voted against it, and I had to vote my conscience because of what the region was. So I'm into this big thing with Jimmy Kay before the conference happened. And that's just, a lot of it was because I didn't think that the mecca of recovery was Southern California. We had a lot of people on the East Coast, and nobody knew about it. And we took it personal because we didn't think anybody cared about it. And when we sent somebody from Philadelphia out to the West Coast, I don't know if you got it in this stuff, but it's Bob G. He sent us a postcard. Thanks for the ticket to L.A. and San Diego, loving life and playing basketball. So we never got any information, even when we sent somebody out there to get the information for us. But Jimmy told me this. He says, look, what happens at this conference supersedes your regional conscience. Because I wasn't going to bring any books home. Because I wanted to, you know, I surrendered to group conscience. And he says, the conference approved it, so be it. So he gave me a case of red books, and he gave me a couple of cases of the blue books. And that's what each delegate back then got to take home from the conference. And when I came back, I met Vince and I met Randy. It was like a drug deal at the Maryland House in the middle of the night. We're backing cars up to each other, and we're unloading basic texts, you know. And this is a true story. This is how it happened, you know. And a lot of what goes on in NA today, the foundation of it was pretty ragged. And I'll give you a for instance. Philly always wanted to have a convention, and there was some people that said that it's not recovery. So at one of the regional meetings, three people put $100 bill each on the table, and they needed $2,500 to have the convention, and we could only get $300 in donations, and the region voted down having fundraisers. So they said, if you can get the money together, we'll have a convention. So we went to Atlantic City, true story, and we won enough to have the convention, to put up the front money. And Philly just had the 25th convention. Now, you got to understand this. We didn't have, they didn't even have mugs back then in NA. They didn't have T-shirts. We made a T-shirt of the Liberty Bell. And we put the crack in it because addicts aren't perfect. And we thought that that was a perfect fit for NA people. But there was nothing to sell, no merchandise. And nobody had it together enough, was smart enough at that time to say, well, why don't we do this? Because we had a guy who was in a program. He worked for a printing company. We didn't even think to print stuff and sell it. We printed up and we gave it all away. We didn't So we didn't have any money. And back then, the saying was this: if you need money, take it out of the basket. It wasn't a thing of we're sending, there was no place to send it on to. That's all it was. So, you know, the growing period from 72 to 83 was just what it was. It was probably more of an unstable foundation, but that was the only foundation that there was. And there was no, we had our first area intergroup. We called it intergroup because we didn't know what else to call it. And I can tell you this, the first 10 members that represented the first 10 groups in Philadelphia are still clean today. So that tells you something about service. You know, it, the more you give, the more you get back. I know in my personal life, I gave till it hurt. But I've had the blessings that you know, I'm just a lucky guy. But to go on with the history is, you know, you think of all the times and a lot of what I personally did was just because, it wasn't a popularity contest. There was nobody else to do stuff. And I had no place else to go. That's really the bottom line. And I got involved in service and I started to feel connected more to NA. And I started to feel like I can do this thing. And I like these people here. And they're crazy too. But it's getting done. You know, and then, you know, one of the things that you know, I got to be another part of, and Vince was the chairperson of the World Lit Committee then, was right, it works how and why. And for 3 years, they would send me out every month to California to work on it, and Vince put it together. That book, It Works How and Why, Vince spearheaded the whole thing. This guy right here, he was the driving force behind it. I mean, you know, and Vince isn't the type of guy to go around in the CMP region and say, look, I was the driving force behind the basic text. But I'll tell you, from being there, he was. We wouldn't have it work sound. Why? Because the basic text didn't explain so much as to how to work the steps, how to live this program. And It Works How and Why took it to another, more intimate level. You know, and then all the stuff that's going on today, you know, is the flame of NA is lit. It's here to stay. You know, we're not backing down. We're not the second fiddle. We're not the second 12-step fellowship. In a lot of countries, we're it. You know, and you know, for somebody who came in, you know, I tried to get clean in 71 when I first went to Eagleville, but I got clean in 72. I didn't know that there was only 60 meetings. I thought there was 10, if that. I knew that there was people in California, but they didn't like us. They didn't like us that we were growing without them. And that was a reality, believe me, for a long time. You know, and I know that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to sugarcoat the history of NA and all this stuff, but there was a real East Coast, West Coast issue for a lot of years. There was some people out on the West Coast that thought that was the mecca of recovery, and there was a lot of people on the East Coast who felt that the people on the West Coast should be more disciplined than what they were. And I'll tell you how it came out. It came out in things like the Purist Newsletter. And that was something from the 80s that came out about how to identify yourself at meetings. People from here would go out to other areas and they would hear people identify themselves as an addict and an alcoholic. And there was a bunch of people, more people on the East Coast that were, if you're grateful to another 12-step fellowship, go there and thank them. This isn't a warehouse for dual addicted people. This is Narcotics Anonymous, and we're here to stay. And we're going to do whatever we can. And it might be arrogant, and it might be whatever the words are, but enough of us had gone to other 12-step fellowships and were told not to come back. And that we did whatever we could do to preserve this for the people that were coming in. And we did it to save ourselves. We didn't do it for, there was, there. I don't remember one thing ever that, I'll give you for instance, Trenton State was, I was real involved in service, and Trenton State was the second East Coast Convention. I played ping pong nonstop for the whole weekend. I don't want to talk about service. I don't want to hear nothing about this. I want to have fun. Because what happens when you're real involved all the time, you lose that edge on how to enjoy things. And it, everything isn't all about service. It gets done. And then I can remember that, like, wow, there's all these people here. And it just kept getting bigger, and it kept getting bigger, and it kept getting bigger. And I remember I came to a convention here maybe 6-7 years ago. The escalators were packed the whole weekend. And it was amazing. And I can remember coming here when it was just not like that. And there was room in the parking lot. Remember that? You could park your car damn well any place you wanted. Now you got to drive around for a half an hour and hope that somebody leaves. And, you know, it's all part of the growth. It's all part of the evolution of NA. And you know, and as far as, you know, a documentarian, I'm not one. Every single thing that I have ever had, I had 2 gray books. I had 3 of the white books that came off the press. I gave everything that I had to Blaze. And she needed it more than me. And so I don't have any recollections. That's why seeing what Bob did was like kind of touched me, because it was like, whoa, I remember that. Oh, I remember that. And then seeing my sponsor, Bobby Raymar, you know, God bless his soul. You know, it just takes me back. In the Retail Clerks Union Hall, that was 81, 82. That's shit, 30 years. Time goes fast. The history is still happening. You know, when it's all said and done, and like that's pretty amazing that all but 2 of the trustees are still alive from 86, because they treated me like the baby. I was like the baby of the family. Do you know what I mean? You know what they do with the brat? You know what I mean? I was like the brat. I was the little kid, the smoking gun. I would say things that everybody else was afraid to, because I didn't have the wisdom to know not to say it. And they would, it was pretty cool. But it's pretty cool that 2 of the people are still, I mean, are the only 2 that have gone, and Bobby and Sydney, and the rest are still going, you know, good. And to have people like Bob keep this stuff and preserve it and be able to present it like you did was right on. That was money. That was great as far as I'm concerned. I've never seen anything like that. That's the most in-depth review of our history that I've ever seen. And, you know, I've been to, you know, they asked somebody like me to do a history because I'm old. You know, I'm 59. And they ask me to do stuff like this because they think I remember it. What, are they crazy? I don't have anything written down. I refer to Danny. This guy, Danny M., has every archive that was ever done on the East Coast. If you ever want to know any history about, call Danny M., And if you want to know how he is, hit me on Facebook and I'll give you his info. But he has everything. And there's people like that, that it means something to them, like the Bobs and the Dannys, that down the road, 50, 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, people are going to reflect back on and say, wow. You know, and somebody like me, Bob said, I'm living history. I don't look at it like that. I'm just another addict. Do you know what I mean? That didn't keep anything. I gave everything away, because anything that was given to me, they'll do it for somebody else. And that's how Barbara Blaze was. She was a giver. She took care of her babies. And that's how she was. And I know she gave a gray book to somebody who threw it away. I know that. And it, like, oof. And I was lucky to have seven of the red basic techs, and they're all gone because I gave them to newcomers because I thought it meant something to them. But, you know, probably didn't. I don't know where they are. But the thing is that there's enough people, there's enough history, and there's enough people that are going to come to things like this to want to preserve where it all started, where it came from. And, like, the only on those things, I'd never been to Jimmy's house, but I've been to Shire's laundry. I'd been to the place out there because Bobby took me by there. He took me to all the old stomping places. You know, and it is important to a certain degree to know where we came from and where we are today. Because I can tell you this, when I first got clean and we couldn't find places to have meetings, we had them in people's basements. Blaze used to have meetings in her basements, and we had the Rockefeller Law back in Jersey. Two or more addicts banded together was an act of conspiracy, so we had to hide. And she said it's a program of attraction. She had five or six bags of pornographic materials to bring guys to the meeting because she says, I'm going to get them one way or another. And she said, and if they're tall, skinny, and bow-legged, the better. And that's reality. That's how, you know, a lot of the East Coast, you know, came about and stayed. You know, I can tell you this. I'll bet half all the meetings in NA started out of resentment. You know, it's wonderful that we have 50,000 meetings in 2008, but I'll bet 25,000 of them started out of resentment, because I know that that's how the East Coast grew, at least in the Northeast Corridor. It, believe me, it started out of resentment. Somebody would say something, and we're so damn sensitive that, oh, I'm just going to start another meeting, or I'm not going back to that one anymore. I'll start my own, and that's what happened, and so on and so on and so on. And then it went to two, then to four, you know, and so on and so on. And that's how we are. It's NA is the one fellowship that is probably the most hypocritical fellowship that I've ever been involved in my life. And I've only been in a couple of clubs, and one was bad and this one. And what it was is, NA talks a lot about unconditional love. And that's all they do is talk about it. It's tough to live it. And this is probably the most conditional fellowship that I've ever been a part of. But part of that undisciplined, conditional love had a lot to do with the history of NA. Because when we come in, we bring in a lot of baggage. I know we think we're honest, and I know we think that we're free, and I know that the last paragraph of the fifth tradition in the basic text says that any addict can stop using and find a new way to live, but it isn't like that for all of us. There's a lot of people that don't make it, and I can say this, that, you know, you got a lot of people that get through, it's almost like you got to go through the fire to have the ability to love people where they're at. You know, and there's enough people that are going to keep the flame lit that have gone through the fire, and NA's for real. And NA's here to stay. And like I said, if anybody wants to know any documentation of where, when, see Danny. See this guy right here with the black T-shirt on that says Pink Floyd. He has a basement and then some of everything. And he started this since he's been clean. So it's a lifelong vigilance for somebody like that. You know, and it's just nice to have that. It's nice to have our history. It's nice to have the Dannys and the Bobs that can put it in so you can see it, visualize it. Because you can't visualize what the fuck I'm saying. I know that. You know, because I don't even make sense to myself. But anyhow, thanks for listening to me, and I'm an addict named Dutch.